It's time for the Border News Roundup. Joining me is Marshall Helmberger. He's the editor of the Timberjay newspaper. Thank you so much for being here today, Marshall.
Happy to be here, Sarah.
So let's start today. It sounds like there's lots of stories coming out about mining. Why don't we start about an investigation that's being launched by Betty McCollum?
Yeah, well, basically, 4th District Congresswoman Betty McCollum is requesting copies of prepared comments that she believes that the Environmental Protection Agency had prepared but had never provided to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency as they were in the process of issuing a permit for polymet mining. And, of course, I think we talked back in late November about this when the MPCA did announce that they were issuing this permit to PolyMet. And but, you know, typically the EPA has been very involved. They were a cooperating agency, of course, in the entire environmental review process, and then also in the permitting phase. And they had been, monitoring this whole project for many years, and have over the years have provided some of the most detailed and substantive comment at virtually every step of the way here. And they had been maintaining regular contact with the MPCA. And in recent months had been expressing some concerns about the permit that the MPCA was drafting for PolyMet, and had indicated that they would be putting those concerns in writing. So MPCA officials had certainly been expecting to see something from the EPA, and in the end, it never arrived. And so I guess the question that some are asking is, why not? What happened to those comments? It seems likely that the career staff at the EPA who, are very involved and really know the details of a lot of these projects, many of them have a scientific background, and, were very aware of this whole project. They if they were prevented essentially from weighing in with specific concerns, including possible concerns that that the permit might not comply with the Clean Water Act, if they were prevented from expressing that due to political concerns from higher-ups, that would obviously be a fairly significant issue. So that's something I think that that McCollum's office is hoping to explore. They had been tipped off on this situation here this week by a letter from Paula Maccabee, who's with Water Legacy, which is an environmental group based in Duluth. And Maccabee had uncovered information from a data practices request to the MPCA earlier this month, and it's those documents that she did receive, including handwritten notes by some MPCA officials, certainly indicated that that EPA officials did have some concerns and that they were planning to address those in written comments. So it certainly implies that there's reason to believe that there were comments prepared, but that somehow somebody higher up the chain in the EPA might have prevented those comments from going out. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I did talk with McCollum's office, and they indicated that they are taking it very seriously and that they are going to be requesting any of these comments that the EPA might have prepared. And so it'll be interesting to see if they can actually obtain those and what they say. So I guess we'll have to stay tuned to this story.
Certainly interesting, just kind of all the different layers that goes into a permitting process of a large project like that. And I know that you'll keep us posted on that. And another story that you were talking about was the Minnesota India bans have created a task force looking at wild rice. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, this was actually created last year, sort of in response to a task force that was created by Governor Mark Dayton. Of course, the issue here has been wild rice and the sulfate standard in Minnesota. Sulfate is a chemical that's released often. It's a pollutant released most often by utilities or mining, the mining industry. And it's been a concern. Minnesota has a very strict regulation or standard for sulfate of just 10 milligrams per liter, which was adopted back in the 1970s to try to protect wild rice because it's very sensitive to sulfide, which is created in lake and stream sediments when there's a higher concentration of sulfate. So it's kind of a complicated issue, but it's been a big concern to both the tribal governments as well as environmental groups in recent years, because even though Minnesota has had this strict standard on the books, the state has not enforced that standard really ever. And they had been putting some pressure, environmentalists and the tribes have been putting pressure on the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency in recent years to try to get them to start enforcing that. It's created a big political storm. The mining industry in particular has kind of flexed its political muscle in trying to block any enforcement of that standard, and it kind of created an impasse, which the governor, I think, was hoping to try to get past by the creation of this task force. And, you know, it was a mix of stakeholders. He had some tribal representation as well as industry and environmental groups. But the tribes, particularly in northern Minnesota, felt like they were not adequately represented on that governor's task force because the six affiliated tribes of the Minnesota Chippewa tribes had only were only going to receive one representative on that task force. So they opted not to participate and instead joined with all of the other tribal entities in Minnesota and created their own task force, and they've issued a report about the same time as the governor's report came out, which was last month, and their report is certainly much more urgent in terms of the need to enforce that 10 milligram per liter sulfate standard, and also to take measures to start protecting wild rice. You know, they're very concerned about the decline in wild rice that that we've been seeing in Minnesota, and they say it actually reflects a long-term trend that's happened, you know, taking place over decades, where wild rice has been continuously declining throughout North America. You know, in fact, you know, originally wild rice was found in every state east of the Rockies, and now today it's pretty much limited to Minnesota and just a couple areas in northern Wisconsin and northern Michigan. But other than that, it's pretty limited, and even here in Minnesota it appears to be declining. So there's a lot of concern given that wild rice is very central really to the culture and religion of the Ojibwe in particular. And, of course, it's a great food. And, you know, anybody who goes out there and harvests wild rice knows what a great experience it is to do that. So there's, you know, there's spiritual, cultural aspects to wild rice, as well as just a food source and a source of income as well for many ricers. So there's a lot of concern about it. And the governor has proposed to create, or the governor's task force anyway, had recommended to the legislature that they create a stewardship council. And that's now before the legislature. We'll see if the legislature adopts that recommendation. And most of the tribes, even in the ones who didn't work on the governor's task force, they're definitely supportive of the idea of a stewardship council, but they don't want to see it become sort of a delaying tactic. And that's one of the concerns that they have. You know, sometimes you can committee something to death, and it just ends up, you know, delaying things. So they're concerned about that. They really are pushing for this enforcement, and they say that wild rice is kind of a canary in the coal mine, which is reflecting the fact that we're seeing degradation of water quality in much of Minnesota right now. from a variety of reasons.
So the next steps then in this process with the report that's come out, is it enforcement then? That would be kind of ideally what they would be looking for?
Yes, I mean, certainly it would be. And of course, you know, and it's interesting too, because the tribes now have, they actually have the ability to regulate water quality on their own lands, like within the boundaries of their reservations. But, you know, that it's not really clear whether or not they have the ability to kind of weigh in a legal sense on discharges that are outside the reservation boundaries but may still flow in then to the reservation. So there's probably some more legal work that needs to be done on that whole question. But, you know, at this point, I think the biggest question is whether or not the legislature will create the stewardship council. And I think as far as the task force, the tribal task force, I think the biggest push that they made here was just to try to get their point of view out. You know, they feel like they oftentimes don't have, you know, kind of the same media clout as you know, as major industries like the taconite industry.
Well, I know you will keep us updated on the progress of that. And we have more mining news. It's kind of been a heavy day for that. There's some legal challenges that are taking place in regards to some permits that were permitted back at the end of November.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and it's funny. It just seems like all of these are kind of coming due at the same time, and we've had a number of lawsuits filed over PolyMet, but we've also had a number of suits now that have been filed over the decision by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to issue a new wastewater discharge permit to U.S. Steel for their Minntac tailings basin north of Virginia. And we've got dueling lawsuits here in that the both Water Legacy as well as the Fond du Lac Band have both filed suit against the MPCA, arguing that that the permit that they issued to U.S. Steel is not compliant with the Clean Water Act. And at the same time, U.S. Steel has filed lawsuits against the MPCA, arguing that they exceeded their authority in attempting to require the company to regulate certain discharges, including discharges to groundwater. So this is it's going to be interesting to see, I guess, how this all plays out. Obviously, dueling lawsuits, I mean, the MPCA would probably say, well, we were probably right about in the right place then if we're being sued by both sides. However, you know, that remains to be seen here. If this permit is not compliant with the Clean Water Act, then there certainly could be issues there, which could affect this in court. You know, the MPCA has dealt with similar issues here and haven't necessarily always fared that well in courts or before administrative law judges. So it remains to be seen, I guess, how this all is going to play out. But it is interesting how all these issues now just seem to be headed into the courts after really years and years of kind of wrangling outside of the judicial process, but it just seems like it's all coming due at the same time.
So historically, are these legal challenges, does it just kind of delay the process and ultimately, you know, things kind of trudge forward? Or
it really depends. I mean, you know, the track record of most of these lawsuits are mixed. You know, I mean, they certainly win some and then they lose some. So it remains to be seen. You know, right now, as far as the MPCA is concerned, you know, they do have an active permit now that they have issued to Minntac, and that will obviously remain in place until a court would rule one way or another on this. I mean, I'm assuming there's actually been, I think, four different lawsuits now filed over this Minntac tailings basin permit, and presumably the courts will decide, you know, just for efficiency's sake, that they might try to combine them all and just argue the issues all in one case. So that, you know, hopefully would be you'd get one decision that would resolve this issue. Otherwise, you know, these cases could drag on for years.
Well, a lot going on in mining in your neck of the wood. Thanks for keeping us up to date on that. Have you been out skiing at all?
I've been out snowshoeing every day. I go snowshoeing every morning, actually, before coming into work, and the conditions are really good. The snowmobile conditions are good, too. You know, we've got probably about anywhere from 15 to 18 inches of snow on the ground, and that base is pretty dense, you know, because we've had a little bit of warming, and it's been a pretty mild winter so far, and we've had a little bit of rain and drizzle here and there, so that snow is packed down pretty good. It's fairly dense. So it makes a good base for whatever you want to do. I mean, right now I would say opportunities for winter rec are pretty good.
I saw somewhere on social media people that were saying if you're going to be out on the trails, make sure you have your snowshoes and not just trudging through on your boots because you're ruining the trails. That was their public service announcement.
Okay. Well, that's true. And one thing that should also be mentioned, too, is that because we've had you know, a fair amount of snow, but that it's also been so mild, there is a fair amount of slush out there on area lakes, and in some cases there's not as much ice as normal. So you know, people need to take care, make sure that if you're traveling on the lakes, whether it's snowmobile or you know, vehicles, whatever, just to take care wherever you know there might be some current. We've had some cases here in the last few weeks where people have gone through the ice and there have even been some fatalities. So those are certainly things we want to avoid.
And we've gotten word, too, for people if they do planning going out fishing or whatever it might be, just recreating on area lakes, to really make sure that you're checking in with the DNR to get the most up-to-date totals of what the ice depth actually is.
For sure, because it varies a lot.
Thank you so very much, Marshall, with checking in with us today.
You bet. Thank you.
Yep, have a good weekend.
You too.
That's Marshall Helmberger. He is the editor of the Timber Jay newspaper. And you're listening to the Friday Morning Show here on KAXE KBXE.